Sometimes,
okay.
Yeah.
Do.
We're still working on House Bill 539, and we're continuing our discussion today with Catholic representative from her interim committee. He's going to discuss and field questions on the distribution of monies for the health portion of the revenue sharing package. For those of us who didn't bring their copies back, the secretary will be here shortly with. We pointed out that the interim committee felt, and the people we talked to felt, that it would be better to have to transfer the function from the Department of Individual Affairs to Health and Social Services for the distribution of these hospital funds. You'll note there's a few other changes in that section for dealing with that particular part of revenue sharing.
Chairman, here's copies of the parallels between the new approach and the old analysis that Fran proceeded with. And the health section.
Brian, you want to come on and sit with us? Identify yourself in the records.
My name is Brian Saylor. I work as staff to the Interim Committee on Health Planning. And shortly I'll be on the research staff of the Legislative Affairs Agency. I've passed out a quick analysis of the amendments to the bill as they read right now in the bill that was presented by Mr. Barrier and is under consideration by the committee. If you would rather read through it first, or if you'd rather just have me explain some of the changes that are being considered by the interim committee now, we can dispense with the first analysis. The bill that's currently on the books takes money from communities for health services based on a hospital bed capitation. Even in other health facilities, it assumes that there are beds present, whether it's in a public health center, which usually doesn't have too many beds, or whatever it is. Nursing home, of course, does. But mostly it's hospital beds as a capitation rate. This is probably because there are so few health indices that are as consistent as a bed. You can always count it, it's always there, it's easy, so beds are used. In most cases, the money that is returned from the state to the municipality goes to that facility that gave rise to the initial entitlement. That's the way they say that if hospitals generate the money goes to hospitals. You can see immediately the effect of this. People with a lot of hospital beds get a lot of money. People with few hospital beds don't get much money at all. And usually, if health status is considered, the exact opposite is true with respect to need. People with fewer hospital beds may actually need more money to be given to them in the provision of health services. We could talk particularly about rural areas without hospitals. They need something else to help defray the cost of providing services to people. The bill then, the philosophy that the interim committee is considering and has, by the way, not adopted, but it is one option that we are considering, is developing revenue sharing schemes that are consistent with the new Health Planning and Resources Development Act of 1974. This act tries to attack health services at a regional basis, and we be consistent with that, revenue sharing money would have to be generated and allocated on a regional basis. This, of course, tends to defeat the basic purpose of revenue sharing.
you're just talking about distributing the health portion of the revenue sharing funds on a regional basis rather than a municipal basis.
That's right. These funds would be allocated according to a healthcare systems plan developed by the regional health systems agency. And it, this plan would have the basic property of identifying areas of considerable need in healthcare, the provision of healthcare. The revenue sharing monies, regardless of where they're generated, would go to the areas of greatest need. The effect could be said to be a grant in aid from Anchorage to Dillingham. It might end up being that.
How would you spell that out? I mean, it would be a grant in aid because it would be Anchorage would be having less in comparison with what Dillingham might have gotten?
Anchorage would be generating an awful lot of revenue sharing money because it has a lot of beds. However, it may not have the greatest need for that health service money. And if the regional agency, in its publicly adopted plan, had decided that another community, a smaller community, had a greater need, the money would go to that smaller community. So in effect, we have a grant and aid program.
Speaking of these HSAs, the one that Anchorage would be in with, how big is that? That wouldn't be just the Anchorage Bowl area, would it?
No, it wouldn't.
Do you want to tell these people a little bit about HSA?
There are three health service areas in the state. The health service areas have been carved up along regional corporation boundaries. This appears to be the most dominant boundary right now in health services anyway, because it's federally mandated. The northern HSA is the three northernmost regions, the North Slope Borough, the Arctic Coast, and Doya. The southeast is just Sealaska. The south central, where Anchorage is everything else. It's eight regions. It's by far the most populated and largest region.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead. In your analysis here, what section deals specifically with the idea that you're talking about right now?
Section A of 4317040 is that section which distributes or pays to municipalities monies using hospital beds or health facility beds as a capitation. Section B of your bill supports the construction of hospitals. We have some changes there too, but pretty much the waterfront's covered there. It's principally Section A that there's a major philosophical discussion about.
That's one clear point. Your analysis here in this page is relating to amendments to this bill.
That's right. I took the bill that you're working with now last night, and did a summary of it.
Okay.
So this is not coming from sections H and J of the original statute.
Lisa had a question here.
Are you proposing that the health service areas? The discussion of health service areas be included in this bill, is that what you're saying, that there's going to be further proposal to change this bill a bit?
Well, that would be the decision of the committee, whether or not it would be introduced as part of this bill or even become a bill at all, or become a separate bill or what?
Well, what I'm trying to get at is it's not included in this bill at the moment.
No, it is not.
That was my question. I wanted to know if I couldn't believe that I'd overlooked something.
Yeah. this is the proposed amendment. I suppose it could be it wouldn't even have to be attached to this bill. It could be an amendment to the present statutes right now.
Yes, it could be an amendment to sections H and J of the existing law.
Mr. Chairman,
Senate Bill 473, identical to House Bill 530.
The one I used last night.
It must be.
I hope
it is, yes.
Haven't been heard. I used this bill.
Yeah, they're the same thing.
They're the same?
539 and SB 473.
Excuse me, my error.
Mr. Chairman, what we're saying is that we're advocating a change in this section. We're proposing this as a replacement for this section in our bill here. This health, this approach to allocating health service, health monies to health facilities would replace this section here. It's approach through the health service agencies rather than per hospital bed, an approach that's given in the bill at present. Be allocated through health service agencies through the three regions.
Okay, then as I understand it, generally what you're doing is you're changing the money to the allotment amounts, and you're also changing who gets it and who determines who gets it.
Yes.
So, I haven't really fully taken all this in yet, so. Mike, would you like to come and sit in the committee? You may have some questions for him, too.
Yeah. Sure.
If I could add, Mr. Chairman, there are positive and negative effects of this thing, the delivery of healthcare services. Currently, some small hospitals depend quite a bit on the receipt of revenue sharing money to help support operating expenses. As I understand it, neither Medicare, Medicaid, general medical relief, or other public assistance funds, plus the addition to self-pay patients, are enough to support the operations of a small hospital. Therefore, the small hospitals tend to depend on additional revenue sharing money to keep themselves afloat. This could have the effect of channeling that money, which hospitals are used to budgeting for, away from hospitals and into other types of health services. On the other side of that issue, it is possible that if people are prevented from using hospitals by other types of health service that would be supported by revenue sharing, there wouldn't be a need for that many hospitals anyway. So we don't know which way, what the net effect would be, but those are two possible effects of this amendment.
What is the need for this amendment?
Sir?
What was the basic need for this amendment?
That it appeared that quite a bit of the revenue sharing money that was generated by hospitals was going to hospitals rather than the support of other types of healthcare service. Hospitals are the most costly method of delivering healthcare that we have, and it would be probably a wise move to begin to stop the concentration on hospitals.
Why would you be? Explain that.
If people are prevented from getting ill through a shot that might cost the state $7.50, as we had in the diphtheria program that the department ran, a certain number of people would be prevented from getting into a hospital, which costs $130 a day for hotel charges alone. That's room and board. It would make sense then for the state to put a bit more money in the provision of preventive care or outpatient care than it would to concentrate on inpatient care. One of the effects of the bill, as it was to take money using hospital beds as a capitation, therefore emphasizing hospital beds, and giving money back to those entities that gave rise to the initial entitlement. In other words, back to the support of hospital beds. the concentration then on hospital beds might not be as well-founded as was originally thought.
I'm having a hard time following you. If you carry this to extreme, wouldn't it be cheaper then just to close all the hospitals? Is this what you're trying to say?
Well, you can't. Of course you can't do that.
Obviously you can't just wave the wand and say everybody's going to be well and nobody gets sick. We have hospitals, and I would assume until the great day comes that we're going to continue to need them. And I don't know about other parts of the state, but in the people that I represent need that money, and they need it badly. And from the experience they've had with the Department of Health and Social Services, they damn sure don't need them making it any worse than they are now. It's the way they handle it. The system that we've been using is clean, it's dependable. They know that if the legislature provides the money, they're going to get X number of dollars, and they, as you said, they can, but that's the great thing about it. And the legislature in the beginning, when they started in to help hospitals, help communities with their hospitals, that's exactly what they intended to do. And I think to go the route that you're even suggesting here would be perverting the whole idea of the thing as it was set up in the beginning. And I would take great exception to any move in that direction as far as I'm concerned. But I know that the hospital at home that we have are constantly having problems with health and social services over, you know, the part that they're supposed to play in their assisting a hospital. They tell them one thing, they're going to pay them X dollars a day for patients, and then a year later they decide that, you know, they can't do that, and they have them in hot water constantly. This is at least the way we're doing it now in revenue sharing is one thing that they can depend on. And I'd be real cautious about, for my part, about changing that.
Well, to begin with, before this change could ever take effect, it would hinge on the passage of your intercommittee work and legislation on the HSAs
being established.
Right. Jim,
I'd like to comment on that, and on Oral's objection, as I understand this new concept, Oral, it is that the funds will be allocated through the regional health systems agencies in order to equalize health services, because each health systems agency in these three regions will have priorities set up on where the various needs are. And the funds will be allocated based on a certificate of need to give places that might not ordinarily get these kinds of funds a chance to develop health care, health delivery systems. A facility that may not have existed before. So it isn't always concentrated in just the urban areas, which already have far more extensive health facilities than rural areas, for example. It tries to spread the allocation of these funds equitably so that rural areas are more eligible and have a better chance than they had under the old system.
Can I respond, Chair? Well, I'm not going to quarrel with you, except maybe on the word equitably. These communities that are, and some of them are not that large, they're all not, all the communities that have a hospital are certainly not as large or as affluent as the Anchorage area. And those communities are carrying quite a burden right now. As a matter of fact, again, being provincial and going back to my own district, in my entire district that I represent, there's only one hospital. And all the rest of them use it. And I don't, to be real frank with you, they need that money, they do depend on it, and I don't want anybody in the health and social services with their fancy planning and schemes diddling around with that money. And they may decide, who are they to, you know, why should I have that much trust in their judgment if they decide, you know, that Ketchikan General Hospital doesn't really need any help, so we'll take this money and put it over in some area. What position does that leave the governing board and the comptroller, these people that have the responsibility for the finances of that hospital, where does that leave them? This way it's positive and they know what they're going to get.
I have no quarrel with what you're trying to do, but I do object to you tearing down something or taking away something that we already have, something that they can depend on to do it. If you want to provide additional health services for places that haven't been able to or didn't want to or whatever, provide for themselves, come up with some money and give it to them, let them do it. But I think it would be a grave mistake, you know, to start tampering with Bill, you know, if you want to do something like that, if you want to add some additional money for it and do it some other way. But I'll bet you that you find the hospitals in the around the state that are in a position because of the high cost of health care have come to not only to need this money but to depend on it. And they need it to be positive. They need to know that they're going to get that and not maybe yes or, you know, I just don't know what would happen to them if they were in a position where they didn't know unless they had some board or some commission or committee or whatever make a final decision as to whether they got some or they didn't. I don't think they could hack it.
Would you like to respond?
Yes. One thing that they could do would be to assure that they use their facility to provide services for the greatest need. If the money is allocated on the basis of need, and if that need is determined by a group of reasonable people, then if a hospital found that it wasn't able to support its operating expenses because there just weren't enough patients, it would be reasonable for them to try to do something else that was of greater need. Like, for instance, putting in an alcohol center in a hospital, or running a clinic in a hospital.
I thought you were going to say a motel.
Might be a motel. If it brings in revenue, it might not be a bad idea. I don't think hospitals are sacred.
I would think that your assumption that these people would know what to do with the money on additional services is probably not valid due to the empire building that goes on. I have yet to see any agency that had money look around to see where it could best be spent. That agency will use that money. You bet your life it will. But
I think, Mr. Chairman, we should clarify one point here. These health systems agencies are not the Department of Health and Social Services. This is mandated by the federal government, this regionalizing of health care. And these are a whole new structures in which each region sets up its own agency. It has people who are supposed to be broadly representative of that whole area who serve on the health systems agency, and they have to apply to be the agent for the health systems, health service area. These HSA terms get all confused. But anyway, in each region, the people that make up the health systems agency must be geographically representative, must be, what are the other representatives? We have consumer representatives. They have to have people that do represent the entire area. So we assume that they will know what the general needs are. And if, say, if Ketchikan Hospital is one of the priorities, it's assumed that they would recognize that. If that's the best delivery system for serving that region, I don't think it would be left out in the shuffle. I suspect the people in that agency would recognize that. These are people who themselves apply within the region to be the board of the health systems agency. They are not selected by the state. They have to be people that apply to be that agency's board, and they have to be approved by, what's the final setup on that? Go through approval by the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. So it's
well,
not...
For the state board, they have to be approved by the government.
But each systems, the health systems agency, is approved by...
That agency. If the thing is out of compliance with federal law, it can be appealed.
I mean, the people that apply to serve as a health systems agency.
Oh, final decision is the fence.
That's what I was trying to get at, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
These agencies have a lot to do with the distribution of a lot of other funds, too, isn't that correct? And that's why the suggestion or proposal is that they also have a controlling hand in the distribution of revenue sharing.
Mm-hmm. That's where we should help Hilbertton funds and funds such as that. I hope I'm being misspelled carefully, because it's a new concept, and then we're going to have to do it anyway. It's mandated by the federal government to set up these agencies.
Would you feel it would violate the whole philosophy of that, these new organizations, if the revenue sharing funds were distributed in the old way? Are these funds going to be significant in comparison to the other monies they have available?
I don't know what the breakdown would be, to tell you the truth. Do you have an idea?
No, I'm sorry, I don't know what the dollar figure would be.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me as though if we're going to tamper with the state system based on the vagaries of whether or not the federal system is going to be funded, that's something that you can't depend on from year to year. And it just seems to me to penalize a hospital in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Ketchikan so you can open 7 new maternity homes somewhere else just doesn't make good sense in any way, shape, or form. What generated the analysis of the bill? Who asked for this? Is this just your own idea?
Well, to give a bit of context, a bit of background on what was in here, the effect of this bill, and then the philosophical changes that are being considered by the committee right now.
But you're suggesting this as an amendment, not to the bill we're talking about.
It could either be in the form of an amendment to this bill or a separate bill. There's been no decision yet by the committee. It's still in discussion stages. There's nothing.
Lisa, did you have a question?
Yeah, I agree with everybody. I see a need for the hospitals to be able to count on certain funds. I think maybe the basic problem is using the hospital bed as a basis for the awarding of the funds. That makes it necessary that you include the hospitals in the funding program. Would it be possible to develop another basis for awarding funds to the regional associations and award those funds for activities not including hospitals and then have a separate program for hospitals? Have you run through that possibility already?
We haven't been able to come up with any reasonable capitation rate.
Would you explain that capitation rate term?
As I understand it, if you want road revenue sharing monies, you measure miles. I think a lot of that's changed in the new bill.
That portion remains the same.
Okay, but there's a certain unit that's used as a measure for calculating the grant award.
Sure.
And when you get to hospitals, the only thing that appears to be consistent is beds. If we could find out something that would get us to figuring out what the need was, but health services is so vague and statistics are so variable that it might not be as solid or tangible as a bed. A bed doesn't go away.
What I was trying to get at is separating the hospital awards from the other health delivery awards so that you're maintaining support to hospitals, but you are also recognizing the needs of other services. So you can award money to hospitals on the basis of beds, and the problem remains how do you award it for the other services, and it seems to me that is really the problem. If we could solve that problem, then we wouldn't have a problem with separating them out. Does that make any sense?
I don't know. I kind of interpreted his answer to include let me just see if I got the picture right here. The regional health, or the HSAs, are going to collect money from the state's going to pay them, or the department, and in this case, Department of Health and Social Services will pay them on the old eligibility scale. Like they'll count the number of hospitals in a HSA, and they'll count the number of beds, and they'll say, okay, now these hospitals under the old system would have collected this much money. Now that amount of money goes to the HSA, and they decide whoever they want as they determine the need. Is that correct?
That's right.
What I'm quarreling with. It seems like mixing apples and oranges to me to count the number of hospital beds and then award money for mental health outpatient care and maternity homes and whatever else comes under it. It seems to me that you've got to develop a way of measuring the other non-hospital services that are being delivered. And if you can do that, then you don't have a problem with maintaining separate support to hospitals based on hospital beds. And then another way of measuring the other services. You've made a very good point that it's very hard to measure that type of service, but that seems to me the problem, and that's what we should address, is how to do that.
Mike?
Yeah, I'd like to make a sort of an observation, Mr. Chairman, maybe generate a suggestion as well. I noticed on the last page it said the revenue sharing bill, and I presume you're talking about the health services revenue sharing bill, is not yet in final form, although it's undergone three revisions. It should be ready for discussion purposes within a month. It seems to me it's very difficult for us to analyze this without an actual bill in front of us, because we're all maybe have a different idea of what an HSA is until we actually see it. I'm wondering if maybe the wisest thing might not be to do what actually the interim committee did, and just take it a step forward, and that is just incorporate current law into the shared revenue bill that's before you, and go ahead and just move on that. The other interim committee apparently will have their legislation at least ready for discussion purposes within a month. I'd frankly hate to hold up the other bill for a whole month, because actually then we're probably talking a little bit longer than that, because but if it's ready for discussion purposes within a month, that means we're talking about, you know, a couple more weeks to get it actually moving. So I wonder if we shouldn't just incorporate present law, as the interim committee did, and move the bill forward, and even pass the bill with full knowledge that if the health interim committee comes in, their bill then will stand or fail on its own merits, and you know, they put a great deal of thought into it, and I think once the bill is finally constructed, they'll be able to come before this or other committees and present a concrete case. I think we're kind of imposing on them right now, since it isn't in final form. So and obviously, if that bill passes after the revenue sharing bill passes, then it supersedes the portions within the revenue sharing bill that deal with health care. So until we actually have the health care bill, I think that we're generating some interesting discussion, but I don't think it's really meaningful for us. And I think we have to wait and let the health committee, you know, do their good work, and then but we can, in the meantime, proceed with the other bill.
Well, that case, on page 5, then that would be 4317040, section B, where it states that the section should be administered by HSS, or HSS, and F, where it requires a certificate of need.
Yeah, well, I think we can go ahead and do that. We can do two things. Let me back up just a second. We found out the other day in this session before the legislature started that HESS now, apparently, at least the representative with us, is not all that anxious to take it over. Apparently, at the time, the suggestion came to us from the administration that HESS handle the revenue sharing mail out of dollars. At that time, both CRA, Community Regional Affairs Department, and HESS thought that was the best way to handle it, because apparently there were some administrative problems. They apparently have solved those administrative problems now, so they're no longer all that excited about transferring the function over. They think the CRA is actually probably in the best position to be doing it, at least as the law is now constituted. Now, that may change entirely once the Health Delivery Systems Committee comes in with their legislation. So I think on the basis of the latest advice from the administration, and I don't think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chairman, but I think we thought we were just accommodating them anyway. I don't think any of us are, you know, gave a whiff whether the check came from CRA or HESS or HSS. So I think we could probably just leave revenue sharing where it is for the present time, with the understanding that if the Health Delivery Interim Committee wanted to do something about that, you know, there again, it'll be in a bill that we can look at. Certificate of need, we could put a provision in there that just leaving the status quo, except if we wanted to, you could say that if certificate of need legislation is developed, by the legislature, then it has to meet it. I don't think that would even be necessary. I think if certificate of need legislation is developed, it will automatically be, come under it. So I think we can probably just disregard that change too for the time being.
All right, I think I agree with you. We have Palmer McCarter here, the new director of the Division of Local Government Assistance, and I just wondered if you care to make some comments generally or specifically on the bill.
Not at this point, Sam. I think Mike just explained something I was hoping would be explained. This process of the bill, as the interim committee did submit to you, did assume that the function would be transferred to HESS. I think that's been resolved. We're getting some reaction already from communities. Not sure that that's the way to go. DNRA is willing to basically leave the status quo. We would feel strongly that somewhere along the line, the certificate of need legislation, either in this bill or some other bill, does need to be developed this year. This has been one of the biggest conflicts between the two departments, whether or not this is a requirement, the certificate of need. We're developing a lot of figures on the proposed bill, and hopefully we'll get that to you at a later date.
Not too much later date.
I wonder if we might hear from municipal aid on this. Let's see, pops it now.
Thank you, Mr. Hershberger. I really thought that we had no objection to this bill as it is. But in what's developed now, I'd say that we at the least strongly recommend that you leave it in community and regional care. In the analysis I heard, I admit I haven't read it, but I'm sure that we would oppose delivering revenue sharing assistance to local governments and give it to a regional authority that's going to be set up by somebody we don't know. And if you're looking for reasonable people to spend local money, I think the councils and the assembly are the most reasonable you're going to find. But with that change, I think we can deliver the bill. Well, we just endorse it 100%, but with that change now, legal is community and regional.
Thank you. Are there any other areas of the bill, if we were to leave that intact, that anyone's got any particular problems with?
The question that I raised earlier, I would like to know if there is going to be opposition to substituting on the language on page 3 at line 20. $1,000 per bed to organize boroughs to change the word boroughs to municipality.
I think we're with you in the spirit on that. I wonder if we're going to have to, will we have to change it, section 2, 3,
well,
it, 2 or 3?
What other substantive changes would be necessary? And as I said earlier, my objection to that is, all it would be doing by changing it to municipalities would be broadening rather than narrowing the thing. By using the word boroughs, you're obviously limiting it to boroughs. If you use municipalities, you include both boroughs and cities, as the case may be.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would go further than that, and I would suggest changing all of the references to organized boroughs and cities to municipalities, since in the definition section, a municipality is defined as a borough, city, or unified municipality. So I would suggest using the term municipality throughout, rather than, it seems confusing the way it's drafted now, because you're talking about organized boroughs in some cases and cities in other cases and so on. And municipality is used as a generic term, evidently.
Mr. McCarter had a comment on that.
I might comment that after our meeting with Mr. Miller and Bill Barrier, I think that we have jointly agreed on several wording, not substantive changes, but this very type of thing that exists not only in the current law, but very few that exist in the proposed amendments. Our staff is preparing some of these per line item corrections that we feel are appropriate, that we would like to at some point before this gets into the too far a stage of committee substitutes and whatever, get that information to you.
When do you think that it can be available?
It should be ready Friday afternoon. It could be to your desk Monday morning. I would like, as a courtesy, to clear up with Bill Barrier, since he has not only the present bill but the previous bill done a lot of work. I'd like to go over those with him before we actually submit them to you. But there are several items. Mike mentioned yesterday the business of, in this current bill, there's no reference to military population, for example. That type of inclusion we feel probably should go in.
Please.
I have one other question, or two other questions. Under the minimum grant in Section B, when it lists the possibility of getting money for certain services, even though you're still under the minimum grant, is there a reason why solid waste disposal was not included under that list and was included under the straight revenue sharing list, or is that just a mistake that it was left there?
Are you talking about the startup grants in the beginning?
Yes.
That's one of the things that Palmer bringing. That was just an omission.
Oh, okay.
Solid waste See, solid waste was the last category we added, and the bill was all typed, and frankly, we added in one spot, and we just neglected that at the end.
The other thing I'd like to bring up is that revenue sharing funds from the federal government carry a non-discrimination clause. The funds may not be used for any service which is offered in a discriminatory fashion. And I would like to see such a clause inserted in this bill. I am in the process of getting the language that I would propose and the justification, the rationale, and so on, and the proposed way of method of enforcement. But I just wanted to know that I will propose that such language be included in the revenue sharing of the state of Alaska.
That's already provided for.
Is it already?
Well, most of the monies go to a municipality.
Right.
And if they don't, they go to either a volunteer fire department or a hospital that's outside of the municipality. Right. And of course, the funds aren't, they aren't directed, I mean, they don't direct the municipalities to spend the funds in any one area. So they go into normally a general fund of a city or borough or whatever. And then, so what you would probably be talking about then would be to say that a municipality couldn't receive the funds if they
If they are found to have discriminatory systems in any of the areas in which they from which they get their entitlement.
That's an area that I know you've worked extensively in. I just
I don't have the language now.
I wouldn't see where any of the municipal services that are listed would really have much of an opportunity to be discriminatory. But then again, I'm not that familiar with.
Well, I can see in each of them. I won't discuss it at length now because, as I said, we'll talk about that language ready. But in fire protection, there have been cases in cities in the lower 48 where fire stations, the location of fire stations, for instance, has been found to be discriminatory because they are not located in areas of heavy black population, for instance, where they can get quickly to a fire. They're located farther away. It's a discriminatory practice.
It is.
I want
to. Who is there?
Second.
Well, anything else that needs to be, if anybody feels like pressing for the end?
Where these 21 emerging districts exist, and elections are to be held on February the 24th, those board members of necessity will be getting an awfully late start for preparations for the school year to begin on July 1st. And our concern would be that communications and travel being the problem they are in those areas of the state, that the 40% requirement could conceivably delay even further the capability of those boards to get organized and prepared for the following year. I think in general we wouldn't necessarily quarrel with the idea of runoff elections. If as a practical matter it doesn't impede the preparations for the operation of school next year, and it occurs to me that we did operate in our state and territory for many years without such a requirement, and that the circumstances at the present time would seem to suggest that if we could exclude those districts from that requirement, at least temporarily, until conceivably at some time in the future the need for this was adequately demonstrated, that we might have done a good service in terms of simply getting them off to a cleaner and faster start for next year.
So in other words, you'd testify in favor of the bill?
Yes, sir.
I don't have any questions. Okay.
I do. I'd like to have Bill mention, though. What you mentioned to me, I don't think you did just now, about this should take effect immediately.
I think the provision should be made for this to take effect immediately, because we're faced with an election date of February 24th. And if this doesn't take effect until June 30th or something, we're going to have, I fear, a horrendous problem in getting organized and ready to operate for next year.
Chair, make a motion to that effect, can we?
Yes, I will. To make it, I'd say, how would you word that, to be about to have it take effect immediately?
Include that in the committee substitute that we offer.
Bill, take effect upon passage.
Well, do you see what it's started as of now?
Yeah.
Except for the first election.
Well, the first election will be held in February, as you said, so we say except for the first election.
This deals with the elections. Except for the first election, which will be held in February, the election shall be held annually in the first Tuesday in October. So it doesn't exempt the first election from the runoff provisions.
Well, you know, she was wanting to have the first election on
that? Yeah.
Right, but that's what this does. It does not exempt the first election.
From this provision.
Well, it doesn't hold the first election to the runoff provision. First level.
Thanks, sir. Mr. Swanson, we got started a little early without you. Perhaps you'd like to make your brief presentation.
No maps, no charge, right?
Just in case, Mr. Chairman of the committee, sorry about being late, but had a battle over there with traps and gun control in resources, and had some non-Alaskans in there that would like to stop us from carrying guns in Alaska. Anyway, I thank you, committee, for taking the opportunity to let me come before your committee and discuss this. And I don't know how much discussion has gone on so far.
I can tell you that Mr. Overstreet just testified basically in favor of the bill and suggested that we include an immediate effective date.
We're just about ready to pass it.
We amend the bill out of this committee with an effective date clause on it so that we could go immediately. The reason, Mr. Chairman and member of this committee, for this is that we might get this bill passed into law before the election date on 24th of February, and it would eliminate a lot of confusion and problems out in rural Alaska. The bill originally, or the section of the law, was imposed or put into the bill several years ago, basically to take care of elections in boroughs and cities. And it's one section of the law that we overlooked in the makeup of the bill. We don't need a runoff election in rural Alaska. It would add to our problems, it would add to the costs, it would almost be impossible, and I'm sure that Mr. Osterbach is here to tell you of just what kind of a problem he would run into out in the chain in his area trying to conduct a runoff election in rural Alaska. It would just cause us a lot of problems that we absolutely don't need.
I saw you carrying something in there. Was that a map that would break down the regional attendance areas?
Yes, it is.
I think it'd be helpful if we just at least got a quick look at that.
I don't know if you've got a wallet I can stick it on. Put it down my bag, right? Cement or not?
Takes a tack, I guess they're not too bad.
And I did bring a map just in case you want to do the comparison. The election districts, I don't know if that, I can just set it here. This will give you a kind of an idea of the sections, starting from 1 right straight through to 21. And we don't have a chain that it turned, got it into this map down to the lower end here, but you can see what kind of a problem that Mr. Osi would have if he, in trying to go from one end of the chain to another on a runoff election, would just be an almost a total impossibility. And I have the same problem Mr. Osi does in trying to do the same thing here in this district and also in this district here. I cover this much of the interior of Alaska, and I can assure this committee that in parts of 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 that I have extensively traveled that district. And I know from my personal travels that, and especially in this time of the year, that we would be, that I don't think we can do it. I don't think we could run off an election. I just don't think, and I would ask this committee to adopt this piece of legislation to eliminate that runoff.
I just got
now
one.
There are, excuse me.
I just had a question. How many other, obviously there are going to be in different districts, there are going to be a different number of seats from each district, is that right?
Nearly all the districts have some sections that have by number or by letter 2 and 3 seats.
Anytime any more than 3?
No. No section will have more than 3 seats. And sometimes those sections, those 1 or 2 seats will have a multitude or have a group, 3 or 4 schools running for 2 seats. And that would constitute a runoff election. And it would be chaos in really trying to do anything in a district like that. It was a total oversight, and as the law reads that in addition to chapter 12 of this title and Alaska Statute 29-28040, and that's where we got in those lousy 3 or 4 little words on the end of that sentence on that chapter, if that was out of there, we wouldn't be in this problem. But it was, and I apologize to this committee because it was an oversight on my part.
Does any of the committee have any questions here?
Do you have a problem with the runoff election in general or just for this year because of the time element?
Well, if I can eliminate it out of here, I'm done with it. Because it would not only be a problem now, but it would be a problem then and continue to be a problem of the communications and transportation, particularly at that time of the year. We don't need it. Originally, the law was put on the books to take care of cities and boroughs. And at that time, there was probably no consideration whatsoever what we might be doing sometime in the future. I think this bill came on the books in the late 60s or 70s, early 70s. I might ask the Director of Elections to speak with you briefly on what kind of problems she might run into in running elections.
Okay, I'll get a phone grab next, so. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Patty Ann Pauley, Director of Elections, and we are very much in favor of this bill so that we do not have to hold runoff elections in these regional education attendance areas. As all of you are aware, communications are very difficult in these areas. And even though the second class cities within these areas do also have the responsibility of having runoff elections, in many instances in these areas, they simply do not comply with this. And so then we come along for the school board election saying that any candidate that does not get in excess of 40% of the vote, that we're going to hold a runoff election. And then whenever you look at the elections that are normally held in this area, which of course is for state senator and state representative, there is no provision for a runoff election. And so it is done by a simple majority. And so we feel that it would be much easier and if we did not have to comply with the provision for the runoff elections. And as the elections are on February 24th, as Mr. Overstreet mentioned, in order to hold these elections in our administrative procedures, we have set out that the elections, the runoff elections, would be held 30 days after certification or after the first election, which would push this election in well into March when we'd have it. Then, of course, by the time we get the stuff back in, all the work that we have to do, it would probably be April before we would even, the boards would be even ready to start meeting or to even start any type work. And of course, we chose the 30-day thing, fearing that that would at least give us an opportunity to get the ballots, et cetera, back out to us, out to the people. But with communications in these areas fairly difficult, I wonder if we would be able to even explain to the people out there why we have this provision, why it's required. And of course, it is also fairly expensive to run these elections. And we fear that for one election board alone, we usually spend about $280 if they work, for instance, 15 hours on running this election. So the expenses would be quite high on it. And for several of the seats, we have as many as 7 candidates filed now. So it really would be fairly difficult for any one of those candidates to probably receive in excess of 40% of the vote. So we probably, in a number of them, would be faced with these runoff elections. In some of the areas, if we did not have candidates who actually filed for them, then of course we would have a provisions on the ballot for write-ins. And we have found generally with whenever we have those that it is very difficult to get 40% for any one candidate. So it would probably require the runoff elections. So we would really like to have this bill enacted so that we wouldn't have to comply with that.
I have a couple of questions, but you answered them before you finished. So.
Okay.
Before anyone else talk.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Would you be in favor of a bill that would apply to all the school districts and all the school districts?
Well, I
have... You don't really care about it.
No. My concern is... I would like to get rid of our collections.
Well, we face the same thing in the organized world. We just have a... This runoff election thing is just really bad news.
I think, too, if we look at the voter turnout for runoff elections, we find that it is very, very low. And I believe in most or all the runoffs, the candidate with the largest number of votes actually won the runoff election also.
That's not the case in Anchorage.
Was there one time that it did not?
More than once.
Okay.
Worked with John Smith. Mm-hmm. He'd win the election, but he'd lose the runoff.
People better chance to get acquainted with them.
Yeah. Are there any other questions for Ms. Pollack? Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Cole, have you intended to testify?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'll make this very brief. Simply saying the Department of Education supports all testimony heard here today for most of the reasons you heard it. We're particularly concerned that these board members get elected so we can get on with the job of trying to indoctrinate them into what it is to be a board member. We are preparing training sessions for them. Of course, if they can't be seated until a delayed process, that's going to delay us getting them trained in turn delay them from taking over the job that they have to do. They'll have to take it over anyway, but it would be much better. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to testify? Mr.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe those runoffs would work out in our district. I think we would be sitting without a board. And if they did run off, or you take Attica and Nikolsky and mail service out there, I think it would take at least 2 months to get the first one through. So coming off on a runoff, they would never get a chance to vote again. And Nikolsky probably only get mail once or twice a month. And they scheduled, if they don't make it on that day, if the weather is bad, then they probably get mail once a month. So it would be a little hard and difficult.
How many districts do you have out there, or senators? I didn't even show the chain. I mean, it doesn't matter. I was just curious.
Well, it's going to be 5 seats. Oh. It'll be 2 out of Sandpoint, then like Atka and Nikolsky will go together. And, you know, the smaller villages. It'll be 5 seats out there. I think it'll put us too far behind us, like Mr. Cole said. That we would be working without, or trying to work without a board. If we miss a seat from Atka and Nikolsky, well, the board I don't think could function until we get somebody in there. So I'm in favor of this bill to do away with one of them, at least out in that district. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Make a motion to pass the bill out.
Chairman?
Yes.
Can we postpone this for a couple of weeks?
Mr. Chairman, this reads over my gun.
I would like to say a word or two in favor of Mr. Oster's suggestion. When I first came in here, I was all in favor of voting for this bill, but Mr. Swanson put up a bunch of maps and started to confuse me, and then when he confused Mr. Oster back in Mr. Oster's district, I began to have some doubts. I see he has all this testimony lined up. It seems like a sort of a railroad job to me, and I think maybe 60 days, 90 days delay might be of some assistance.
Second the motion. I'll rule both of those out of order. Really, does this want to mind? Is there any objection moving the bill out with the due pass recommendation?
As amended, is that what you're saying?
With the immediate
effective
due pass.
Date.
Right.
I mean, with the immediate.
That's okay. We never did make that.
I made a motion that we amend it to say, to read, to take effect immediately.
Any objection to that?
Is that needed?
Effective date clause.
Right.
Effective yes. Date clause, immediate passage is a standard.
Should we amend it, or should we immediately have a committee substitute? We might as well just make an amendment. I think it would be easier.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, it must be immediate. If it's just effective date, it should be 30 days.
How's that again?
Passage of the bill.
Right. That was what Catherine said.
As soon as he signs it, law. Otherwise it could go 30 days.
Oh, so you wanted to say it becomes effective immediately upon passage?
Right.
All right, that's the amendment we'll add to it then.
That's the U.S.
There's always an argument about it. In fact, I don't even remember what the charter is. The new charter may have limited the average. No, because the new school board, no, no, the school board is full. I can't remember whether it's all the one or the name.
I know, but was, Sharon, it wasn't in effect at that time.
Secondary came down here.
Opposed the move.
On that health thing?
Remedy is only.
Was this the fast one?
Did I borrow it?
Keep me borrowing it.
Never mind.
It's already there in what respect?
Oh, it was really true. I know Bill Curtis came to the one meeting.
Well, I didn't.
Probably one of the other ones. He wasn't very happy about the other one, I think he was. If we can go back to hospital 539. After yesterday's testimony on the health facilities and hospitals section of the bill, it seemed to be pretty heavy objection to a lot of the proposals, or at least a lot of confusion. And so I'm going to suggest that we leave the health facilities 4317040 as is, and perhaps let the other one ride on its own merits as perhaps an amendment to this. As was announced, it would probably be a month before the 4-year ready.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think several of us have sent copies of the bill to our home districts to get some kind of direct feedback from there.
Okay, I hadn't intended to move it out today.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to find out if there were further areas that we need to discuss.
Yes, okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman. Everybody's getting everybody mixed up today.
Contagious.
As I understood your statement, you said to leave the health facilities and hospital section as is. Was that what you said?
Yes.
I still would like to change the organized boroughs to organized municipalities.
All right. That is a motion.
I would so move.
No, sir.
Is there any objection to that?
Good idea.
I expect.
Let's just all locate where it is.
I'm looking for it.
It's on page 3, line 20.
That whole first part of that section probably has to be cleaned up. So those first three.
And other where it's applicable.
Right. I think that was pretty much agreed upon.
I just want to be sure that we did. And I would like to ask a question if I may.
Go right ahead.
It's my understanding that this is pretty much the language we have on the books now. I don't know how they've been getting away with it, but since we are writing a new bill, that's one reason I was have strong feelings about correcting that. My question is, and I probably should know this myself, but having health powers, I would assume that, and this is only an assumption, but I would assume that any home rule charter city would have health powers, is that correct?
Yes.
Would they necessarily have health powers?
Yes.
They may not exercise them.
But
they
would have it.
They have
right.
The power to exercise it if they choose.
They have all powers not denied by statute. Yeah. So I would assume that would be automatic, that whether they were exercising or not.
They would have the power to take that.
In other words, power. They would qualify an organizing municipality having health powers if that was a home rule or charter municipality. That was my question. I just want to raise it in case. That's wrong.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it seems as though they would have had to have voted to exercise those.
No, not a home rule.
Not a home rule.
Home rule has all authorities and responsibilities, whatever, not denied by law.
Well,
not prohibited by state statute.
Second class.
Second class, it has to be.
Second class, it's put on the ballot. Well, maybe we could just go over the bill, starting at the first page.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question about the health part. Do you want to?
Go right ahead, go right ahead.
Is that okay? On number two, on page three, I just have a drafting problem with outside an organized borough having health powers. I don't see if the hospital is outside the organized borough, whether or not that borough has health powers or not, really. Is that line 27? In other words, I would delete having health powers, but my real question is...
Could you go over and get the statutes, get Title 43?
My real question is, as I read this, it seems to me to mean that a hospital outside any municipality is given a direct grant. Is that correct? It does not go through any... It could be a private hospital that is not in a municipality is granted $1,000 per hospital bed. Is that correct?
It's not. I don't think that any hospital, you know, just any hospital qualifies. I think there are probably certain federal hospitals that wouldn't qualify.
They're excluded.
Well, yeah, we do exclude federal, but other than that, in other words, the grant is directly to the hospital rather than to any municipality.
Right,
or any
if there's no municipality involved, all they can do is give it to the hospital.
That wasn't intended. It wasn't intended that they should apply to private hospitals.
Well, that's my question. It seems to me to apply to private hospitals.
Well, these are grants to boroughs or municipalities, not hospitals.
But section 2 doesn't
say different to each hospital.
Perhaps Catherine might shed a little light on what sort of hospitals we may be talking about. In the unorganized borough, it seems like they'd have to be state bad. Hospitals, or are there private hospitals in that situation?
I don't know of any out in the outlying areas for private. I don't think anybody can afford to run a private hospital in most rural areas. But let's see, Nome is presently building one. Let's see, picture anyone privately making it.
Well, frankly, I can't either, but this language seems to say that if you
should start
a hospital, you would get a direct grant. That's what it seems to say to me. Maybe it doesn't.
What's the one at Glen Ellen?
Boy, I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think there's one in Tolt, too, that qualifies for funds.
I think we should clarify that.
Right, absolutely right.
And the one at Glen Ellen, that's the religious one, religious hospital.
Well, Glen Ellen's probably a municipality.
But there's no, it's not in a borough or a city, I think that's just not organized.
They aren't organized.
Glen Ellen is not an organized municipality.
No.
Any kind.
No, along with our religious hospital.com, which is because they meet all the regulations and standards and are open to all patients and stuff like that. They've still received. And that's who's going over the other night, the certificate of need in that health bill.
Yeah, right, it's a private hospital.
Mm-hmm. But it still would meet all the and still receives.
Well, as long as they meet that, I think it's all right there.
Well, I'm not making an argument one way or the other whether we should or shouldn't, but I just want to know what we're doing.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, but
personally, I feel that from working on the Health Committee, right now we don't have a certificate of need in the states for hospitals, and that's one of the pieces of legislation that are coming in. But right now, somebody could have a private hospital and deny patients, can set up a hospital and say, well, you know, people in these four blocks can use this hospital. That's what we were told by people the other night, legal consultants, that it is technically legal, they can do it. But what I'm saying is that if, until you have a certificate of need, if there was that type of, that's what I'm saying, I don't know of any in the state, but with this bill, wouldn't it be possible if that type of hospital was set up, that that hospital would also fall in line with them, unless you declared that it was...
Well, if you look at the, see, I don't know if I include that in here. This is existing language, by the way, Title 43. And it's 3, 4, 5. And notice on page 4, line 12, it says before funds may be distributed, Commissioner Cash shall certify that any accumulation of assets by nonprofit corporations end up being dedicated to a health.
Right.
Anyway. So other than clearing up the language Oral pointed out to start with, that's, I think we should get a clarification on the rest of that from CRA, just for our own peace of mind here.
Well, as I understand, Mr. Chairman, we're not trying to ace out anyone who's been receiving funds in the past. Is
right.
That goes right straight to the hospital.
But I think we'd be able to better understand the policy of the department in distributing the funds in this case. Like, we'll find out what sort of hospitals that are actually getting the money.
Mm-hmm. Chairman, that language on line 3, page 3, line 26, or 2, is that in this case? Is it identical?
Mr. Mayor,
somebody understands.
There are a couple of new things we put in here on page 5, the section, on line 16, where it says the section should be administered by HESS,
and goes to the hospital.
And line 21, where it discusses the certificate of need. Now, these areas, we're not going to be able to say that we're going to just leave them as is until we get other certain clarifications. We may decide that we don't want to move that the administration of this program to HESS. And I think that there was testimony yesterday to the effect that HESS didn't want it either. But we'll find that out too, yes, Lisa.
I still have a question about the health powers when you look at that section. Could someone explain to me, please, the difference between sections 1 on page 3 and section 3 on page 4? Why?
Do that again.
1 and 3, well, one of them is a...
One is to a hospital bed in organized boroughs, and the, number. Three is to organized borough or city outside an organized borough.
That's the difference.
But there's a difference in the amount of money that is given and why. One is only to organize boroughs, and the other one is to organize borough or city outside an organized borough.
1,000 per bed in 3 and 1,000 per bed in 1.
No, but then or 4,000, one says, or 50,000 per hospital for those hospitals who attend, and the other says, or 4,000 per health facility as the local government may determine.
They tend to be smaller than smaller.
One refers to hospital, one refers to health facilities. There's some of those that are health facilities that are sort of like some of your
health facility rather than hospitals. That's nice.
Was it the intent on Oral's field, like line 3 of page 4, that organized bill would be organized municipality?
That's where it was.
That's one of those places where it ought to be changed.
Okay, I didn't hear anybody
talk
about
that. Fits in, that would be,
The department has the technical language that they're going to offer.
Yeah, okay. I see, Ramona. And one's hospitals and one's health facility. Thank you.
Any other questions on that? Maybe we can go back to page 1 and talk about the first part of that, 4317010, is just pretty straightforward. They say that we can't create a debt for the state. And the one area that I anticipated some discussion was the minimum grants section of this bill. Perhaps as Mike Miller pointed out yesterday, there's not going to be any problem with that. But yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have some problems with it, and I, as Mr. Miller said, it's an arbitrary figure. They just pull one out of there, and I don't know just how it happened, but
seems to me there's possibilities for skullduggery then in that one.
In what way?
Well, I've had I'll give you an example without being too damn specific. I wouldn't want word to get back home, but we have a community in my district. It's been there for a long, long time. They've had two people living there, five people living there, 10 people living there, you know, this type of thing. But historically, it's a, you know, it's a village. And under the land claims, there was a requirement, you know, that they, so they're organizing to meet the requirements of land claims. They're coming up with a community. And there's no services, and except for the requirements of the land claims, they didn't want any. They never intended it. But it seems to me that just to automatically have these people be in a position to come in and get $25,000 grant with virtually with not that many strings attached as to how they use it is somehow a raid on the treasury.
Is this community organizing?
Well, they will. They're in the process.
As I said, Quad City, you know, there's a population requirement on that.
Yeah. But they're what they're doing, in order to meet that requirement, they're going out and drumming up folks to come back. And they come back, but they don't, you know, they don't really stay there. That's not their home and hasn't been for years. But they're going to meet the requirements all right. And
that's been done before. That was done in
the to me, it just doesn't seem kosher. I don't think it should. You should have this sum. I don't think that sum should be large enough that it would encourage people to.
Of course, the idea behind $25,000 was that you had to give them enough to do something, perhaps hire a part-time clerk or some sort of a city administrator, and perhaps get started on providing services. Of course, you only have to have 25 people if it's outside a borough. Now, it's within a borough.
This one is outside of a borough. But the per capita bit, I don't quarrel with that. You have 25 people, and they. The grant comes amounts to $1,000, they get $25,000, fine, but
Did you look at C on page 2 there?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a question on that too, on C. It says the population figure for a municipality having less than 250 shall be 250. That means anything less than 250.
Those 10
people.
50
people, you could claim to be 250.
You'd have to have at least 25 employees.
As a minimum.
Before you can be a second class city.
Okay, so anything between 25 and above is treated as 250, right?
Yeah, 251 is treated as 500.
Well, I don't know how widespread that would be, how many occurrences would be. I know that the people called in residents to come up to Ibiaki so that they qualify with 12 kids for a school. Maybe about 25 kids up there and kept for 2 weeks and sent them back to Ledlock, and now they have a school for 6 kids.
How
was he? About 3 years ago.
But as soon as it drops out, they close the school.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened. They had 10, I think, and they closed the school for a year. This was 1967. And then the next summer, they all fished up there and took the count, got their
they
school back.
They had it for a year, and then they closed the town. They don't immediately close the school. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it drops below 10.
They send the teacher home.
Well, the section C there applies to people applying for the burden sharing in general. So if they've got, say, 100 people, they'll give them 250, according to this, and then they can compute out what they'll get as far if they went the categorical route. And if they don't they don't go over $25,000 there, well, then they'll take the minimum grant. Perhaps this figure, this isn't, certainly isn't set in stone, as they say.
Maybe it is a little high. I think there are
Perhaps people from CRA will have.
These are all city figures, anyway.
Something discouraging. Just look at that $25,000 and say, this is what I want.
It hit as low as 87 White Mountain, 66 Port Hudson, 36 Port Hudson.
Encouraged to.
68 New Haven, 82 Nicolai.
Almost mandated, I don't like these two organized.
Yeah.
Houston and Houston.
Yeah. We'll adjourn. Be back when you.